Hello, my name is M. Evelina Galang, and I'm the author of Lola's House, Filipino Women Living with War.
We're going to, kind of jump in this way. Okay, Evelina?
Sure, absolutely.
By the 1990s, let's see, you'd heard stories about World War II comfort women, of course, in Korea. And we're talking about women kidnapped and then serially raped by Japanese soldiers. And you had also heard about Filipino women, comfort women, and met some contacts. But there was something that happened in 2007 that really kind of deepened your involvement. Could you take it from there?
Sure. So in 2007, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe made a statement to the world, and he said that he did not feel there was enough evidence to prove that the comfort women of World War II were taken, they were coerced, is the word he used. He said there was not enough evidence to prove they were coerced. My thought was, I have seen the evidence, I have touched the evidence, I have spoken to the evidence. And that got me motivated to do a little research and to hook up with Annabelle Park, who was heading the Coalition 121, which was the coalition, the Comfort Woman bill that was being lobbied for at the time in Congress.
Do you want to just take us through the high points of that?
Absolutely.
Effort?
So at first I wasn't able, when the Prime Minister made that statement, I was really motivated to try to get to him, to try to speak to him. And I did a lot of research and got a hold of Annabelle, as I said. And that bill, which was House Resolution 121, asked the Japanese government to make a formal apology to the survivors. And at that time, the number was 200,000 comfort women that historians had been aware of. And since then, we now know it's 400,000 is a closer number. But that bill asked for a formal apology, and it had not come out of markup yet. So at that time, here I was at the University of Miami in Florida, and my students and I started to work. We started to campaign. We started to travel to different festivals and community centers. We read a couple of the comfort women's testimonies, and we handed out blank sheets of paper. And we said, if you feel like this is something you want to put your name behind, write this letter, put your address on it, and we will deliver the letters for you. And I did that there in Florida, and we did it in California. More importantly, we went to the late Tom Lantos's district and spoke to his constituents. We spoke to Nancy Pelosi's constituents, and we got a big stack of letters.
Was this for comfort women in general, or was this for specifically Filipina?
This was for comfort women in general. This was House Resolution 121 was for all comfort women, and the goal was to get Japan to recognize this war atrocity, the crime against humanity, and to make the apology to all the women. And what was holding the bill back for so many years was that there was this idea that it was purely a Korean initiative, and that it was not really something that happened to all kinds of women. We now know that it happened in China and Japan and Malaysia and the Philippines and Australia, Indonesia. So we wanted to make sure that these stories were documented for all the women. It was amazing to see each representative, each congressman or woman stand up and vote for this bill and say, yes, these stories that these women are talking about, these experiences are real, these things happen to the women, and we are putting it on world record. And after that bill, many other bills like that around the world came up in different governments. So there was a way that even though the Japanese have not apologized formally for these wartime crimes, the nations around the world are recognizing the women standing up and saying, yes, we hear you. And for me, as an activist and a person who's been working on this book for more than 20 years, or almost 20 years, it was just heartwarming to see the stories are being heard.
The stories now. In all your years of experience, what's the best way of going about that?
Sharing them?
Mm-hmm.
It's like this. So I had more than 40 hours of interview tapes where 16 of the women told me their story, their testimony of how they were abducted, of how they were held, of how often they were raped during this time. I had more than 40 hours of tape. They told their stories at least twice to me if they could, and I found other outlets where I found them giving their testimonies so I could compare the stories one to the other. And I think that part of the reason why it took so long for the book to come together is I really wanted to give the stories, their testimonies, the proper structure. At first I thought I would tell it like third person limited, you know, secondhand. And then I realized, no, the stories had to be told from their voices. And so each of those testimonies have been transcribed, translated, and cleaned up so that it is their voice telling each of those stories. And then I thought, how can you give a testimony of rape and abduction over and over again 16 times without some kind of numbing, some kind of re-traumatizing the self? And I realized that as I was making my own journey with the Lolas, there were things that I did to take care of myself, spending time with my family, going to mass with my family, working out at the gym, practicing yoga, meditating, these things to kind of create protection over my own heart and body as I heard the stories and the stories entered me were really important for me as a writer. And that is what I did with the structure of the book. I realized these moments where I took time away from the Lolas became a moment where readers could take a breath, or they could reflect, or they could, you know, create some distance from one Lola story to the next so that you could see the differentiation between the women and how special each of them were.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Did you ever get back to one of the original threads, you know, suicide rates among young Filipina women in, what, Southern California, was it?
Right. It was in San Diego by the Center of Disease Control, that survey.
Right. That was, when was that?
That was, I want to say that was somewhere in 1998, 1999, uh-huh. Shortly after Her Wild American Self came out, there was this survey done by the Center of Disease Control, and they found the highest rate of suicide among teenagers or attempted suicide among teenagers in the San Diego area was among Filipino-American teens, which horrified me.
Did that surprise you?
Yep. And I wanted to know what, you know, at that time, this is what got me started. You know, I wanted to know what the Lolas, the comfort women, knew about life, about being a woman, about survival, that gave them the strength to fight to live, that these girls in the survey did not know. That was my question. That was my original question. I think we're seeing evidence of the need for this conversation when we hear of all the women who are now coming out under the hashtag MeToo movement. These stories are still happening, right? And so for me, I learned, one, that it's so important to realize that what has happened, if you know, to a sexually assaulted woman or girl, this is not her fault. So one of the things that Lolas taught me was you are much bigger than this, and you deserve to, first of all, have mercy on yourself. But secondly, you have a right to stand up, speak your truth, name the persons who have hurt you, and demand justice, which is what the comfort women have been doing. Standing up, saying, you did this to me, and you owe me an apology. I demand justice. And then the other thing I learned was that they understood that when they stood up, they were not the most popular people in the room, that oftentimes they would be denied, called liars, dismissed. I mean, there are several of the Lolas who have gone to the Japanese courts over and over again under appeals, giving their testimonies, reliving these experiences, but they insist on doing it because they know that this justice, this right to speak your truth is much bigger than the pain that they're feeling, so that, you know, there's this need to summon your own courage and your light. And lastly, this idea of community, how women can come together in the form of Lila Pilipina, Liga ng Mga Lolang Pilipina for the Lolas, which is a feminist organization connected to Gabriela, a much larger organization in the Philippines and also one with many chapters here in the United States. When we come together as a community of women, maybe, just maybe, we can stop the violence. So there was, like, they did. They answered my questions just by being with me and living their lives and letting me see how they're going to go about seeking this justice. This story that the Lolas have handed down, this legacy of finding strength to be able to stand up and speak your truth, no matter how cruel the world can be in receiving that truth, has been amazing. Has been, I think, life-changing for me. I feel that this fight for justice, not just for the Lolas, but for all young women and girls, is just beginning. I feel like maybe if, when the women first began speaking up, someone listened. If we were silent and we just listened, maybe we would have done something back then as a community. Maybe if the Japanese government could just go beyond thinking about the politics of governments and listen to the women's stories and valued the life of a single girl, maybe they would have been able to make those apologies. Maybe we wouldn't have to listen to all these younger women who are coming forward now and older women who are coming forward now saying, this is what happened to me in Hollywood. This is what happened to me in Iraq as a Yazidi girl. This is what happened to me in Nigeria by the Boko Haram when they raped me. You know, maybe we would not have to repeat this war on women constantly.
You know, I've read the definition, but I'd like to hear it from you, Evelina. What is a Lola?
A Lola is a grandmother. The word Lola is Tagalog, Filipino, for grandma. And we call the Filipina comfort women Lolas because when they stand and they look at you and they are being who they are, we recognize ourselves in them. We recognize them as our elders, as our ancestors, and as our mothers, and as our grandmothers. So Lolas is a term that connects us to family. In fact, I am a Lola. Not all Lolas are comfort women, but all women are Lolas.
I look at these contemporary pictures of, you know, portraits of them. They're so lively.
Beautiful. They have found joy despite the things that have happened to them, and I think that's one of the things that's really beautiful and touching about them. They're not whiners or complainers. They are out. They set out to do some good despite what has happened to them. And there's great joy in them also. I mean, it's like, I don't want people to think that if you read these stories, it's just going to be just tears, tears, tears. And sometimes the tears are tears for joy because they're so bound and determined to rise higher than what has happened to them.
And a visual description of that spirit and energy is that quilt.
Oh, yes.
Jeez.
Yes. Can I tell you about that? Lola Remedios was not one of the original women I interviewed back in 1998. And so when I came back, all the Lolas wanted to be a part of the project, but we didn't have enough time. And so while I was out going to these various places of where some of the Lolas were abducted or held in garrisons or just in their homes interviewing them, Lola Remedios was at home. And she had this quilt, and she was making this quilt. And she was not supposed to be giving gifts to anyone, but when I left, she snuck that quilt and she gave it to me. And she said, here's my story. And she's so smart. She was so innovative that way. And so, you know, for a number of years, when I go and I give a presentation, I hang the quilt. So she gets to tell her story at every event I go to.
Well, thank you so much, Evelina. This has just been fantastic talking with you.
Thank you so much, Noe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving.